Channel 2 Wright and beginning the visit with Mr. Paramore this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72. Channel 2 Wright and beginning the visit with Mr. Paramore this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72. Channel 2 Wright and the beginning of the visit with Mr. Paramore this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72. Channel 2 Wright and beginning the visit with Mr. Paramore this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72. Channel 2 Wright and the beginning of the visit with Mr. Paramore this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72. Channel 2 Wright and beginning the visit with Mr. Paramore this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72.
How about you, Rod? Do you like that? Sure.
Give him a little water, babe. He needs some.
Sit down over there.
Sit down, Roger. Make yourself a little
water. That's right.
After all, it's just a kitchen.
Just an old country kitchen.
We just make ourselves a home room. Whee! Well, I got it out of them before they got stirred up.
I ought to have been down there then.
Yeah.
That beautiful honey.
Whew. Oh. Yeah, the wind was just right, so that I could work downwind.
Yeah.
And they didn't know where I was going with it. Until, you know, they fly around a little bit, and then they get far enough downwind, and then they go back and tell the rest of them, and by then I had it.
Oh, they can work you then.
Sure they can. Yeah, if the wind, if you're up here and the wind's blowing toward that hive, well, they know where you are in just a few minutes.
Yeah, and then they light out in that direction.
Yeah, you go down there now, see, they're hunting around for it, and they're flying in great circles.
For the set.
Mm-hmm. Flying, they fly out in that wind, you know, and then they smell where I left some on top of the hive, and then they turn and go back.
They come out way over the...
Yeah, they're flying over Pappy's pasture and turning around and going back.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, the wind's carrying it, you know, the smell that far, and then they follow it back. Whew, warm day.
Hey, Mr. Pamela would be like the old bee man. What did they...
The bee man of Orn.
There was, that was in one of the old tales.
One of my
like,
favorite stories.
Like David Crockett. The bee hunter, he would get out there and sight that bee and watch the direction and take out after it and find the honey.
Yeah.
Now that's in the old stories.
Yeah. No, you can tell how far they're going by their flight pattern when they leave wherever they're working on. If you have some honey,
yeah.
If he goes up, he's going a long way. If he just goes, he's not going far.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Oh.
Well, you watch him. If he goes up, he goes around, he flies straight up. He may go up 100 feet, 150 feet in the air before he
really?
Goes.
And then he takes a beeline.
He's going a long way.
A beeline?
Yeah, what they call a beeline.
I've often.
But if he just takes off and up just a little piece, and then he's not going more than, it all depends, you know, maybe 200 yards or maybe a little better, you know, it all depends on how high he goes before he levels out.
Awesome.
Yeah, I had been taking this honey home and I squeezed a comb out, and the first time we got just one little frame. Oh, and 2 or 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, I just squeezed the honey out and put the comb out in the yard. See how long it would be before bees find it? I lost mine at home, so
you
I don't
mean
have
the
any.
Little,
yeah, the comb.
But
and,
you eat it, don't you?
You can chew it. You chew
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
If you swallow any, it doesn't hurt you, you know, but you just chew it, and, you know, like gum.
Yeah.
So anyway, it wasn't but 15 or 20 minutes, and here came some bees.
Here comes Mr. Murphy's bees.
And, well, I didn't know where they were coming from, but I watched them like I was just saying. And when they took off, they went toward your house, you know, up the driveway, and they just went up like that. And I knew he wasn't going very far. And I looked every time I go by Murphy's house. I knew he had had some there a while back. But I didn't see any. And I looked all around the neighborhood and saw those old trees. And I said, I know they've got to be right here somewhere. And all of a sudden, one day here, I saw this hive on top of his house. And I knew it had to be close. And he was just going like that, right over toward your house.
Uh-huh.
And I lose him, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, what did he have on the house?
His hive of bees.
Had a regular hive like yours?
Yeah. Up on the roof.
On the roof?
Yeah. I guess because of the little girl, you know.
Oh, yes.
They got in the way. Didn't want to get bees.
Well, that's pretty good reason, though.
Yes. Yeah.
Little blind, little blind girl. Walking around, so anyway, though, you got.
Well, I love
that. Well, what was that story I interrupted you on a while ago about the bee hunter?
Oh, the bee man of Orne. It's a story set way back in the Middle Ages, I guess. I don't know that it belongs to any particular set of old tales, but
yeah.
The bee man of Orne, you know, he lived in a house that looked like a beehive. And it has a moral to it. And bees just were coming and going out of that house, and it described the old man. As they even had comb built in his coat, you know. And when he'd go somewhere, he'd just put on a coat, and he had his food and everything right with him wherever he went. And finally, one day a young sorcerer that had just gotten out of sorcery school came by, and he saw that old man in that little old house and the bees coming and going, and he said, what a wasteful thing, you know, for a person to do. And so he went in and he told the old man he ought to find something better to do than to live like that, you know, with all of his daily bread, so to speak, everything right there. He didn't have anything to do except just live, you know. Whenever he was hungry, he'd reach in his pocket and get some comb or on the wall. But anyhow, this young fella fussed at him and fussed at him. And finally he told the old man, he said, what you need to do is to find your appointed place in life. This just obviously isn't what it ought to be. He said, you ought to be better than this. And he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. He said, you go looking, and when you find what you really should have been to begin with, you let me know, and I'll change you into that, and you start life all over. So the old man searched and searched and searched, and finally found a little baby. And it dawned on him that he at one time was a baby, so he told the young sorcerer, said, all right, start me over. So he made him into a little baby again. And then years and years went by, and the sorcerer grew old, and he happened back through that same little village, and I'll be darned if he didn't find this man living in some beehive with bees coming and going. And there he was, this old sorcerer with long beards, you know. So I guess, you know, it doesn't pay to think about starting over, does it?
people who had a knack at bees and like that, you see, they really live on the
fat of the land. That's right. You couldn't be better.
And other people wouldn't be able to do that, would
that,
they?
That's, I guess that's the story. Part of it anyway.
And all be invisible and private and no one.
Yeah. And he didn't have a worry in the world until this young sorcerer came along.
Well, you've known people with bees all around the country.
Sure. Sure.
And they are ahead of the neighbors.
Well, they are, you know. In a lot of ways.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, they are.
they've always got some good stuff.
They've got something right there, and they don't have to labor for it. In
and it's
way.
Good.
It's good.
And nothing better, is it?
No. I went in this Mother Earth store yesterday, and I don't know. I don't know too much about these people and organic stuff, you know, but I can see that you know, the simple life. I put a great deal of stock in it. But anyway, we went in there to see if they would buy some honey. Roger decided what he'd do. He'd sell it and make a little money. So I went in there and asked the lady. And she says, well, is the honey organic? And I don't know. I don't think too quickly, I guess. But I said, I don't know. Didn't want to show my ignorance either. And I said, but it's just like the bees made it. So then she said, well, does it come from anything that has been sprayed? And I said, no, I don't think so. Bees do, they don't go around anything like that, you know. So I don't know whether I satisfied her or not, but it's funny. I thought to myself, well, now here's a young lady. She may know a lot, but she doesn't know too much about bees. Now,
yeah.
What could you make a bee do other than what he's going to do to begin with?
Yeah.
You can't make him do anything. He's gonna make that honey, and you can't tell him how you want it made.
She wanted.
And you can't make it. There's no artificial method known to man that'll make it. You can't make honey. That's one thing they can't do.
Well, let me tell you, Mister. The Good Earth people, you know. They don't know anything, and I don't think they're offensive. And I read in the farm magazines. They and all these learned people. The agriculture people. You know, they kind of throw off on them. I
wouldn't dare do it.
I don't think they're that serious.
Don't either. If you stop and think a little bit, as you say.
Well, you know, you can't get along without commercial fertilizer, but let them try.
Let them try it if they want to. What tickles me is along this line is Dr. York, you know, provost, you know who I'm talking about. His mother lives with them out there on the farm, and she grows a garden every year, and she wouldn't put a handful of commercial fertilizer in her garden for anything. He fusses at her all the time about wasting her time with organic material for fertilizer. Why don't you just speed it up by putting commercial on there? She says, I'm in no hurry. And she grows what she wants, and it's just as big and luscious as anything you.
He doesn't
fool with her garden. She just won't tolerate that a bit. You never did ask your question.
They talk about the fads, you see. Well, that's all right. The fads all right.
It comes and goes.
And then they've got all those myths about farmers always wanting clean air and clean everything else. Why, that's all foolishness, you see.
Oh, well.
They need it.
Well, I finally told the young lady, I said, why, they bees go down there and they gather that honey out of the orange blossoms and they work on the wildflowers and other things. I said, they get their work right out of the woods.
Yeah.
I don't know how much closer to nature you could get than that. I wasn't being facetious or anything, just talking.
Well, now, how do you all eat it, Mr. Paramore? Do you squash it?
Well, it'll pull my plates out if I'm not careful.
Uh-huh.
My plate, I haven't got but one, but just cut off a little piece and put it in your mouth and just squeeze it gently with your tongue or you chew on it or suck on it and the honey will come right out. Or when we get home, now what we'll do is I have a board, you know, that comes together with a hand,
uh-huh,
and we put it in there and just squeeze it out.
Squeeze
the honey right out and then strain it through a netting to get any of the loose comb,
mm-hmm,
and then is very clear.
That's what
you
I
put
would
it right through a strainer.
Well, you don't need to.
You don't need to.
Clear,
No. If I'm that we use at home, I don't pay too much attention to it. A little piece
but
of comb
you
in
you wouldn't want there. All that comb in it.
No. No, usually you leave it in the comb for prettiness, you know. You put it in a jar and put a little section in the comb. You see it in the store that way, and it looks pretty. And well, I guess you know people.
Just be sure it's funny.
Think of the old biblical saying, you know, sweeter than honey in the honeycomb. You know, well, it's no sweeter in the comb than it is out. But it's just pretty.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, all the old days,
comb just serves as a place for the bead store. That's all.
You know, I think it'd be right, awesome to consider. You see that you don't know about bees than Solomon did, and all those people.
Well, I sure don't.
Well,
all
like
the old lore about
it,
he
did
lore. And Mr. Pamela, this thing, you see, now I was down there on a cloudy day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They do not like cloudy days.
Oh, they don't.
Mm. No. I went ahead and robbed them last Sunday because I was already here, but I thought the sun was going to shine, and it didn't. So I didn't want to waste the trip down. And I said, well, after all, it won't take but a few minutes. But they didn't like it a bit. They get
and you had
to mean on a
blow
on
them right smart.
Yeah. Now, today, I had the smoker there, but I didn't smoke those bees today. I just lifted it out and took a tea weed and brushed them off.
You did?
Yeah. I had the smoke there in case they got upset, but I didn't really use it.
Well, now, I was standing some little ways back from you, Mr.
You were, but it was that cloudy day that did it.
I can't stand cloudy days.
Just,
you get near them on cloudy days.
And I was standing
right
still, because
He flew in there and he got confused behind your glasses. He went in behind your glasses there. And then by the time you reached up, so I saw that one. And just you knocked your glasses, and when you did that, the other one got you up here.
Yeah.
And then you put your hat over you.
Well, there seemed to be several there.
Yeah, well, they were flying around. They wouldn't have done anything other than just investigate around and have flown on. But
now, you saw it?
Yeah. I looked around just in time to see him when he went in behind your glasses. And then you reached up with your hand.
Well, he was just investigating.
Yeah.
He wasn't mad at me.
Mm-mm. No. Uh-uh.
If I hadn't done anything?
If you hadn't done anything, he wouldn't have gotten upset. But that confused him, and then he just came right back and let you have it. And then the other one did.
Yeah.
See, when they sting you, they let out an odor.
And that attracts the other ones.
It attracts other ones.
Oh.
So yeah, that's why you're fooling around with them. You want to
well,
be careful not to
said,
kill
see,
one of them.
I let my hat fall down.
Yeah, if you'd just been very careful, you know, and just closed your eye very gently and reached up and moved your glasses, he would have flown on. And maybe he would have perhaps flown on that. But when you reach that
moon, it seemed to me like there was several right there.
Yeah, well, you get excited. Yeah, you have to.
Golly.
You got to think.
And you saw it.
And, yeah.
And these sort of hard.
Just
about time I said, you've come close enough. Because I knew they were, you know, they were really, really
yeah.
They didn't like it. And he went over to investigate you. And
just one.
Yeah.
Just one came over and investigated me.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the mistake of
yeah, he got in close and you got in behind your glasses there and got confused.
Because I wasn't bad mind at him.
No, I thought you remembered what I told you the other week.
Oh, I'm glad. And he saw it. And you see, I just let my last fall off and walked on,
mm-hmm.
like he said.
Yeah, you didn't run. You were wise there. You just turned and walked.
Now, if he had run,
well, then that would have...
That would have been in the hill.
I remember when I was about 17, 18, I had a bunch of bees. And I was out robbing them back then, you know, young. You know. And I was robbing them without a shirt. Didn't even have a mask, nothing. And I had an old bird dog. And it was out in the edge of the woods. And that old bird dog, you know, was running around out there chasing quail. It was long June, you know, young quail. I wasn't paying any attention to that dog. And he came woof, woof, wuffling through close by where those bees were with his tail just a-going. And they lit on to him. And he did the only thing he could think of, I guess. He ran to me.
Oh.
And I was there at the hive, and when he ran there yelping and carrying on, some more got on him, and then he wouldn't get away from me. He was all around my legs, and they got on me. And I had to throw down everything, and there was nothing left to do except leave. And they stung me all over, and I, well, for 2 weeks, I couldn't see beans, and my face was well, that was the one that hadn't killed me.
It is.
The dog ran
my
to
head.
You.
Yeah, he ran all around my legs. He wouldn't get away. And there was nothing left for both of us to do except run.
Well, I thought you was going to say he lit out.
No, no. Instead of him lighting out, he turned and came to me.
Well, if he lit out, they'd still have got him.
They would have gotten him, but they wouldn't have gotten me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that is something.
But he was just one of those dogs, you know, who was well trained. And
he thought you could help him.
Yeah.
Why not?
He came running to me.
You came over there and squashed it.
Yeah, pulled it out. Yeah.
You pulled it out.
And
right?
Then I squeezed it. I told you it would hurt,
yeah,
a little bit, and I squeezed it. I don't know whether you felt it or not, but I pushed all that venom out.
Yeah.
And that kept the swelling at a minimum.
Yeah.
If you'd left that in there 15, 20 minutes, why, your face would have been all puffed up.
Because all them muscles were sad.
Yeah, everything. It just keeps right on pumping. What?
It's a blue jay out there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a blue jay. Yeah.
So what you do is take that stinger out the first thing, and then
mm-hmm.
squeeze it.
And then squeeze where
well, he had a puffed up eye, but it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, I know when I, in just a little while afterwards, you know, the last time I saw you, I could tell it wasn't going to be too bad. It didn't look like
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
It was going to be too bad.
Well,
but that's the secret. Get it quickly. And that one up here, I used my fingernail and I forced it out.
Now there's a
beauty,
right?
Yeah, boy, that was a beauty. We had one like that started digging a nest in the oak tree right outside of our window on the back. And
he ran away.
She worked at it for a couple of weeks, and I don't know what happened to her. Whether she died or what.
Now he's got that dark color. He's a.
Now that's the male. The female has a little V that comes like that on the back of her head. Just a slight, looks like a V.
And that dark color, he's an immature. He's a young one.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they do have that real dark.
Well, Mr. Pamela, just watching bees is a
that's
life
the most
work.
Fascinating thing. I can sit and watch them, watch them.
How do
what work? Do you watch?
Well, just watch them coming and going. The real fun is to get a hive with glass sides and see what they do when they go on the inside.
They don't mind you watching?
Mm-mm. No.
That's
you
what
can,
I want
to do. You watch one come in with loaded down with pollen. You know it's all over his back leg, and it doesn't take him 2 seconds to unload that stuff.
Oh, really?
And he goes right up there, and he just kind of like that, and he drops it in that cell he's putting it in, and he turns and goes right away, like a dump truck. You'd think it would take him a little while to rake it all off, but it doesn't. It doesn't take him more than a couple of, just like that, and he's got it both legs clean and takes off again.
I was going to get to help Phil rob bees today, but I forgot to bring my sweatshirt.
But I love to watch them watch the old queen and how they look after her.
Now there's two of them out there now.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's there all the time?
The queen? Yes. She may come, she'll go once or maybe a couple or three times during the season. She may come out and fly around a little bit to get a little exercise and go back in, but ordinarily she never goes outside at all. You never see her unless you go inside and look for her.
Unless you locate her.
And she's there. Oh, the circle will vary, something like that.
Where she is?
Yeah, you can find it. They're all facing her in a little circle. And she moves, and they're all by herself in that little circle. And they, if she moves, whatever direction she goes in, they either back up or they move forward with whichever direction she takes. And they're always sitting there watching her. They're here, all of them in a circle, watching her. They feed her. They clean her. They do everything.
Yeah.
She doesn't do a thing in the world except lay eggs.
But she lays eggs.
And that's all she does.
And she's the only one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's the only bee in the hive that can sting repeatedly.
Oh.
Regular. Ordinarily, when one stings you, why? That's the end of his life. It tears the back end of his abdomen out. But the queen can sting many times.
The queen won't sting unless she really has to.
The drone has no stinger.
Yeah, you can hold it.
You can pick him up.
Oh.
He has no stinger at all.
Oh, now what's he good for?
Nothing except mating.
Sitting around mating and eating.
He's what they call the playboy, I guess, of the hive.
Just one?
Oh, no, there's a bunch of them. And maybe, you know, they'll hatch them out in the spring.
But just one queen?
Just one queen. And she will lay a bunch of males, but the rest of them are all female, just like she is.
Except she's bigger.
Except she's the only one that can lay eggs. And so the male, or the drone, is the only bee that can go to hive, and he'll be accepted.
Yeah.
He'll fly out of one, and he'll visit in another hive, go in there, and they feed him, and he eats whatever he wants. They get out of his way. But when the food begins to run short,
they make it, they scoot him out.
They run him off.
Oh.
They run him out the door, and he just goes on off and dies. Because he won't work. He won't do a thing in the world except wander around and eat. But they let him come and go. Any hive, wherever he goes, he comes. But now if another one of them was flying to the wrong hive, you can take one and put him in there and stand there a minute or two and you'll see him hauling him back out. But if you put a male in, well, you just...
They don't hurt him, but they just haul him out.
No, not male. They won't bother him.
I mean,
they
can't tell. If you put a female bee, another bee, you know, all of them are female except
the drone.
If you take one from this hive and put him in this hive, they won't tolerate him. They'll kill him right away.
Oh, kill him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I say him, I mean the.
You mean the female?
Yeah, female bee. Worker bee.
Worker bee. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I thought the workers were.
They're all female.
So that bee can't afford to miss.
He won't.
If
he does, well, he's in sad shape. Now you can take, like, you know, this is the hive, and you see a bee come out, and you go there and move it 10 inches. Just move that hive 10 inches, and you stand there and watch. And that bee, when they comes back, he won't go to that hive. He'll fly right to this spot here. And he'll buzz around, and he'll come back out here, and he'll come again. And he'll go right back to that same spot. And he may do that 4 or 5 or 6 times before he finally makes up his mind that something's wrong. So you sense that something's wrong. But he'll go right back to the same spot he leaves without faith. You move that thing back, and then watch in a few minutes, the ones that left while it were over here will come here and be confused. And they'll fly back and go out here a little piece and turn around and they come back. And they'll try it again. Thank you.
Well, does that make them nervous when
they... No, not necessarily. They just, they're confused, you know. Their directional radar is just, it's out of this world. They don't miss. And if one flies into a wrong hive, you see him right up, fly up there, and he'll light on the platform. And if he doesn't belong in there, he bows his back.
Bows his back.
Mm-hmm, and that's what gives him away. If he bows his back, the rest of them will jump right on him.
Or
have a fight.
Bows back?
I don't know. It's just one of their quirks, right? He knows he's, you've seen dogs, a strange dog come along and you kind of cow.
Yeah.
That's what he does. He knows he's in strange territory and he kind of bows his back and becomes cowed and the rest of them jump on
but
him.
But the dog, other dog won't jump on a dog when he's cowed.
No, ordinarily, but they'll kind of walk around and around, you know, and let him know who's boss.
Yeah.
So nature's a funny thing.
Mr. Pamela, this now on honey, can you make something to drink with honey?
You mean like a beverage?
Yes, like a wine or.
I've never heard of anything like that. It will sour.
Oh, it will.
But I don't know that I've ever heard of any. Fermenting. Now, I suppose you, when you add water to it, of course, you're breaking it down. But as long as it's like it is there, it almost will never spoil.
Oh, really?
It'll turn to sugar eventually if you leave it in the air. It will turn to crystal.
You put yours in the refrigerator?
No.
Mm-hmm. He just puts it in jars and puts it on top of
the seal it up in a jar and put it up
in
the
jar. Put it up on top of
it. It'll be just as good a year from now as it is right now.
Yeah.
And you can put something in there, and it'll preserve it. It won't. It's a wonderful preserver. So there are a lot of things they don't know about it, you know, yet. But it's perfect right there. He's gotten just enough water out, and it's just the right state. That it'll remain that way. And of course, as I said, if air, you leave it in the air,
mm-hmm.
it will crystallize.
Mm-hmm.
No, I might leave it out there.
But it'll take a while.
Yeah, about a year. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
You realize that's a good while.
That's a good while. But the evaporation, the slow process of evaporation.
But our old molasses will crystallize.
Yeah, it right away. Overcooked or something like that.
Now, when they sell it in the store, do they cut it down?
Mm-mm. No, if they do, it won't keep.
Won't keep.
That's why you see a sign that says pure honey.
It'll be just like this.
It's got to be. Because you change it and it will not hold up at all. It spoils right away.
Yeah.
So you can't cut it. No, you can't take a gallon and make... Two
well,
gallons or a gallon and a half out of it.
Does one good thing lead to another? Now, you take syrup, cane syrup, like they used to make, you know, all
mm-hmm.
through the country. You see, if you get some of that that's made by somebody who knows how to do it, you see, it'll make you dissatisfied with almost anything else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It has a flavor to it.
It has a flavor that's pure.
And all like that.
I can tell the difference right away, and that's one of the great failings of the stuff you buy in the store now. It doesn't taste like 100% sugar cane syrup to me.
No,
I can tell the difference.
No, it's there's no resemblance.
But you go right to the kettle where they're cooking it, and it does have a flavor that cannot be matched.
Yeah.
And this old evaporated stuff they make now, they ruin it, in my opinion, in the evaporation process. But the old kettle rendering method, that just can't be beat.
I'll tell you what, some of those old things you see are so good that I think people ought to...
Well, we'll go in a minute.
I think my I didn't realize it, of course, but I think my big mistake, you see, I thought I was getting somewhere when I bought this land. I got it cheap, you see, $100 an acre. And it was in grass, so I couldn't plow it up. I had to just get some cows put on it. Well, you know, I just had a little place out here and had a garden. And maybe put in an acre of cane and made a little syrup. I wouldn't even have to have the, I didn't know how it was then, but you see, can't make it by yourself, you need a little help.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you do, you know, whoever's got the kennel, you just take your turn and go over there, you see, and you help with yours, they'll help with yours, and you can help with theirs, and you can cook it off. And it don't matter what time of day or night you do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's merry. Everybody's merry, you see, anyhow. Good nature.
Yeah, back in those days, you know, you had, you made people merry when you were cooking, you know. Do you know what buck is?
Is it? It's the, I never heard it called buck.
Well, buck is the, when you skim, skimming,
skimming,
and you put it in a bucket or something, a tub, a wash tub, or an oak barrel, and of course you get quite a bit of it, and you leave it there 3 or 4 days, and if you're going to grind cane over a week's time or two weeks' time, well, man, you got all kinds of hell. And it was merry. By the time you got finished, everybody was merry.
Yeah.
And it would begin to ferment, and I guess it was rum on the way. I don't know.
Well, let me tell you. You know, one of the saddest things that happened, you see, is that the young people have left the old people. They don't hang around at all anymore.
So, oh, yeah, it's a shame. You can't live in the country.
So you see,
you're a square if you live in the country, you know. That's part of it. I think America's lost something.
Yes.
In that, the way of life is just.
And the old people keep making it as long as they can.
And then
but you know, there's a whole lot of work to it.
Sure there is.
And they always need a few young people mixed in to do the heavy work. But there's not really so much work to it. So
no, not really. I know when I was growing up, of course, we were almost self-sufficient and there on the farm. We had a dairy farm. And back during the Depression, we didn't suffer at all. We had everything we wanted. And my mother would do the cane making, syrup making, and she'd always candy oranges. Candied orange peel. When the syrup got just so, why, she'd put in just enough, not too much, maybe 3 or 4 oranges. And she canned them toward the end of that batch and store them. And we had syrup coming out our ears, all of them. And then we had honey, too. I've gone many times with them to grind grits at the grits mill over at Melrose. Of course, it's all gone now. And this hadn't been 100 years ago, this was 40 years ago. But it's all that's gone. Nobody does.
Well, yeah. The first place I landed after Cambridge hit down here, I found a little place up there at Lightway.
Just as you go into Lightway.
Over there in the, I don't know what community it's called, Leo Campbell is where it was. His neighborhood out there, and Leo had everything, just just like his daddy had. It was as close to museums you'll find. The wagon, kept it right in the same shed where his daddy kept it, and pulled his tongue up just like his daddy did. And he had his little mill for grits, and he'd grind it every Saturday, and he grew his own corn. And you see, it seemed like every meal, he'd eat a grits. Now, and when he ate grits, he piled it up in his plate.
You got it.
And anything else just went on top of it. And
Roger. See, you're like this young generation. You got no time to stop and talk, and that's what's wrong with America today. Part of it. Nobody's got time to stop and talk. Don't fuss at me about talking.
Now Leo didn't. He didn't farm much. He was really unable.
Why don't you go close the door before the bees find that honey in that car?
Don't you think this is too much for us, Mr.
No, no.
You could take some of. Well, you could write
I got seven more supers down there that need emptying, and there's about 50 pounds in every one of them.
And he, let me tell you, Mr. Vassar, he.
And they're filling up the ones I'm emptying.
And Leo, let me tell you, Leo had a. He made his he cooked his grits and one thing he wouldn't do is fertilize. He simply wouldn't fertilize. And to save me, I never could understand that. But you run across it. I've run across all sorts of people who wouldn't fertilize. Mm-hmm. He raised corn, and he didn't get much corn because he didn't fertilize it. But he had plenty of grits. He had that old gasoline engine that pumped water up into the tank, and it's good water. And he'd pump it every 2 or 3 days and let it run over, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think you'd have a lot of pressure from up in there, but you don't,
but
have,
you
much, don't have much pressure. But it wasn't anything that costly out there that cost him. He could just live well.
Well,
He didn't have any. He didn't make syrup anymore. But they had done all those things,
mm-hmm.
you see.
Yeah.
And all the equipment was right there to do it. But see, the boy, he didn't work around the place much. Or he worked around there when he was growing up, sort of, and learned how to work. And then he went over to Copeland's. You see, he can make so much more copers than he could out there.
Didn't have to worry about a thing in the world, except what was for supper when he got home.
That's very right.
Well, I think about this quite often, and I honestly sometimes feel that I start asking questions. Every now and then I'll get into a discussion with some of these young people.
Yeah.
And I say, well, now what would happen? What would happen in the average home if the electric generating plant was blown all to smithereens? What would happen? Well, they never thought about that.
No.
Half of them couldn't build a fire if they had to. They wouldn't have anything to build it in.
No.
And it'd be burning down the house. So it goes on and on and on. Where would they get water from if somebody dropped a poison pill in the reservoir?
Well, let me tell you.
It just goes on and on.
Let me tell you why we're talking. I work with some of them, but it's very hard to work with them. Very hard. For one thing, if I have anything to do out here, they don't work around the season or what I have to do. I have to work around them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them will say, I'll be out there Friday. He'll call me Friday and say, it'd be a little more convenient for me to come on Saturday if it's the same with you.
Mm-hmm.
Then on Saturday, he'll call me and say, you know, I believe I'll just wait till Sunday afternoon because my wife's folks is coming.
Mm-hmm.
They have to live around so many things. So that...
And on the farm, you just sort of have to do things when it's...
You have to do it when it's necessary. I know when I set up, we grew up on dairy farm. And that was one of the most confining activities I have ever known. Because
that'll hold you there.
It'll hold you there. That old cow wouldn't wait. And you had to milk her twice a day. And she didn't care whether you went to church or you didn't.
Yeah. But see,
and when you get hungry, you've got to...
I bring them out here, but
okay, we're going just a second.
For one thing, now you see, if I had somebody to help me, some younger fella, a sort of groom, you see, a young fella who knows his way around, you see, he could get them to work and get them doing a few things, you see, that I wouldn't do because I wouldn't have the patience to do it. Now I fool with them so much, and I'm through. But you know, that's a whole lot of trouble. It is a great deal of trouble, you see. And what they get out of it really would be the experience. And they don't want experience.
Oh.
They want wedges.
Let's put some bread on the table. Well, we better be running on, and we'll get back down in a few days. Just pick up. Fork, you know, and just kind of squeeze it, leave it in there, and pour out what you want. You know?
Show Mr. Pamela Mamu's system in there, Faye.
Time to write around 7:80. And the end of the visit, Mr. Paramore, this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72. Channel 2, right, around 7:80. And the end of the visit, Mr. Paramore, this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72. Channel 2, right, around 7:80. And the end of this visit, Mr. Paramore, this Sunday afternoon, the 30th of April, 72.